We are in the 18th chapter of Acts, just finishing that up, and perhaps we'll get to the questions today. I would imagine that we will. All right, so in Acts chapter 18, we're just at the last few verses of that chapter. And what generally happens in the last few verses of that chapter, of this chapter, in a very general sense? The second preaching tour ends, and the third one begins. That's what we've got here in chapter 18. So 18 and 23 is your division point here between the two, because it says in verse 22, he landed at Caesarea and went up and saluted the church and went down to Antioch. What happened in each instance with all the preaching tours at Antioch? What was the importance of Antioch in regard to all? Pardon?
Starting and ending.
They all, yeah. All the preaching tours started and ended in Antioch of Syria. That's essentially the importance of that particular place. I wanted to look a little more closely, as Eve recalls it, being the travelogue, regarding the cities that we've been talking about at the end of the chapter. Mickey, of course, went through several slides last time, where at verse 17 of Acts 18, we see that this was a confrontation, essentially, in front of Gallio. And then right after that, in verse 18, we just essentially head out. Though we do see that it says in Paul in verse 18, having tarried after this yet many days. Obviously, we have no idea of how many days were. It could be years, for all we know. But many days is quite a while. It is a while, anyway. And then he took of his leave of the brethren and sailed thence for Syria. Why did he sail for Syria? What was important about Syria? That's where Antioch is. So, a good place for him to sail to, since he started his tour from there and he's going to end it there. It says that he... let's just read from 18 to 23. Randy, would you read that? 18 to 23?
Acts 18 to 23. Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria, and with him were Priscilla and Aquila. In Cenchreae he had his hair cut, for he was keeping a vow. They came to Ephesus, and he left them there. Now he himself entered the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to stay for a longer time, he did not consent, but taking leave of them and saying, I will return to you again if God wills, he set sail from Ephesus. When he had landed at Caesarea, he went up and greeted the church and went down to Antioch. And having spent some time there, he left and passed successively through the Galatian region and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples.
All right, so verse 23 sounds very similar to what? The beginning of the second preaching tour, right? that's the sort of the thing that they have in common, and the fact that they started from Antioch of Syria, or he started from Antioch of Syria, and went through the reasons. And once again, just as was mentioned at the beginning of the second preaching tour, he was establishing all the disciples. And that's pretty much what was said at the beginning of the second preaching journey also. I wanted to look using Google Earth at a couple of these things. Once again, to remind us of where we are, I have a bunch of places turned on here so that you can see them. But it's interesting to note how many places we've talked about so far. I just started putting these on, yes, regarding the book of Acts, just in the area where we are right now. And look at all these places that Paul and others have gone to throughout the region of Israel, Syria, Asia Minor, up here into Macedonia, and down into Achaia. Just places all over the place. One thing that I noticed as I was just zooming around in here, as I zoom out, notice how little this area is and how little it is compared to the fact that we can't see the other side of the world either. Yet what impact these words have had on people throughout the world. Even this larger area that we've been looking at here that includes Israel all the way over to Achaia and will later include all the way over to Rome, that relatively small area there, the gospel that was preached forth from that area impacted the entire world. I find that just amazing. What would Mickey say?
Fascinating.
It's a relatively small area, and if you were to look at this region, we just think about this right here in the middle of the globe right now. There's the Bible Lands area, and if we come around here and look at the United States in the middle, the area of the Bible Lands only took up about this much of it. Everything that we read about in the book of Acts is in an area that just essentially takes in our Midwest. It's just really interesting, I think, to think about that, I think. So, but I wanted to look a little more closely at some of the things that we're looking at. We've been looking at locally, of course. You will remember that we had that Paul had come down into from Macedonia, came down into Achaia, and the first place he went, of course, was into Athens. And then he trekked across the Isthmus of Corinth over to the city of Corinth, and we've spent a lot of time there in the last several weeks talking about what went on in Corinth and all the things that happened there, talked about the temple of Aphrodite and all of that. And then, of course, I wanted to point out again that Corinth is just a little bit of this Peloponnese Peninsula. And so when Paul was there in Corinth for how long? In Corinth?
Year and a half.
18 months, right? Yeah. So I always get that mixed up between there and Ephesus as to who stayed where when. But the Peloponnese Peninsula was quite extensive also. And, of course, he'd been through Macedonia and Achaia also. And on his third trip, he would also go through that even more, because we see that later on there's a mention of some areas that are up here in this area. I forgot the name of them right now. But in this instance, we're taking off from, and I listened to this online, somebody had a pronunciation, they call it Cenchrea, whatever. It's a town that is about 5 miles to the southeast of Corinth. It has a port, and it's a relatively deep water port, and apparently was used quite a bit in the Roman times to house naval ships and such. Apparently, once you get in here, and there's nothing really left to see anymore, but once you get in there, and they used to have breakwaters and stuff in there that they could get in without the ships getting bashed around and things like that from the waves. It's interesting to look. I think it's they say that there's not a whole lot of the ancient ruins of Cenchrea left, and they think it was along sort of this ridge here that's sort of south of the current town of it's not called Cenchrea anymore, but along here. And an interesting thing to note right here is what looks like a quarry. It goes down. You can see that it's sort of a pit. And I think you'll remember when we were looking at the canal, how the roads went down like that. Yeah. So if I come back here and get back to Cenchrea and turn the map about a little bit to where we can see things, it actually, I think, it turns out to be more of a something up on the hill. Kind of like they've done down in Santa Clarita, you know, just chop all the hills down. I think what they did there, though, is that there was a mention that the marble that was around Cenchrea was very useful and good marble. So this could indeed be a marble quarry that they have there, though it does look current. So whether they still get marble or whatever out of it, I don't know. As we zoom back a little bit, though, we can see where Cenchrea is in relationship to Corinth. Here's Cenchrea right here. It's on the eastern side of the Corinthian isthmus. And over here is Corinth, of course. The current-day canal runs through here. So this actually is a good place for ships to put in anyway. At that time, it turns out that Cenchrea was the sort of the eastern port for Corinth, and then another town that was right up here was the western port for Corinth. Obviously, they did not have the canal at that time, and it proved a bit difficult to haul ships across here, though they did it from time to time. Quite an interesting place. It's interesting to see the topography that's in that area. You know, you look down on it and you think, well, there's not much, but really it's quite hilly in that area. They might call it mountainous, but we know what mountains are and they don't. So they left out of Cenchrea. And note that Ephesus being over here on the Asia Minor mainland, what we now know as Turkey, it's not a straight shot. You've got to get around a bunch of islands and things in the middle of the, I think this is called the Saronic Bay or something like this. And if we look at the distance from Cenchrea to Ephesus, and if we just go as the crow flies, for example, and we go from Cenchrea to Ephesus, it says that's approximately 225 miles. So we would have to actually go quite a bit further in order to get that. Note that Paul is going on a ship, on a boat, around through open ocean water, and they're going 250 miles in a boat to get to Ephesus. Now, it says that in verse 19, that they came to Ephesus. Now, of course, Ephesus is a city that we will study a lot about later on and are not going to study a whole lot about right now. But as I zoom in on Ephesus, you can see here that indeed there are ruins in Ephesus. You'll remember that Mickey showed some pictures of the theater that was in Ephesus, and you can actually see that right here. I probably have it in his older slides. Here's the theater right here that was said that could seat about 25,000 people. And if I turn my 3D view back on, you can see sort of an artist rendition of what it sort of looked like, because you could see some of these upper tiers up in the hillside with the 3D rendering off. And then apparently there was a big old building here in the front. And then there was this walkway here that was apparently fairly common for temples at that time that were close to the ocean. They would have a walkway that would go down to the ocean or sea or whatever waterway was close to them, so that they could look straight down that road and they could see the sea. Now, it turns out, however, that this marshy area here is what used to be the sea. And if we zoom out a little bit, we'll see that the coastline is actually significantly further away these days than it was at that time. This river that's there, you can see the little snaky river going down here, went through this area, and it started silting up the area. And so I have this whole area here looks like, I think it's properly called an alluvial plain. In other words, the dirt comes down from the stream and it pans out into the shallows. And if it keeps doing that, it'll eventually make it so that in flood stage, it'll put more dirt out there. And then when it goes down to normal, then the river will be down below the area. And I believe this, as I was reading, they said that's one of the reasons why this is a pretty good agricultural area these days, is because there's a lot of deposition of topsoil in that area. So the temple used to be right here, and they had this pathway that went down, and they could go right sort of essentially to the port right here. Can't do that now. It's a couple of miles down here. So this would have looked a whole lot different in the time that Paul was there. The temple here, indeed, the history seems to indicate that it could indeed hold 25,000 people. Did I say temple? Theater. And so it was a very large structure. Once again, I have the 3D rendering turned on. If I turn that off, you'll see that we have much less to look at these days. But you can see some patterns up in the hills up here where the additional benches and such were at that time. Quite a city. One of the people said that a lot of people were saying that there must have been maybe, 250,000 people around at that time. But the commentator, whatever it was that I read, said that it wouldn't be possible given the topography and the location and things like that, that the city wouldn't have been nearly that populous. That of course makes no difference to us, but it is interesting to note. So Paul went there, but he didn't spend a lot of time there. He went this 250 miles across the sea, taking, I would guess, a number of days to do that. Ended up at Ephesus, and who did he go with? Priscilla and Aquila. And so they went with him over to Ephesus. What then did he do?
They stayed there.
Right. So they stayed there. He took off. Where did he go first, as his custom was? He went to the synagogue first, okay? Was he required by law to do that?
No.
It was his habit. It was his custom to do so. Once again, two uses of the word custom. And so we see that, in my reading through the book of Acts throughout the years, I've always thought, well, Paul spent a lot of time at Ephesus early on. And I found it confusing when I got to chapter 19 and found that he was talking to just a small group of people in Ephesus, and then realized that when you go back, you say, oh, well, he's actually only just been at Ephesus for just a couple of days and then left. So he didn't spend a lot of time there on this, the second preaching tour. But it is on the third preaching tour that we find, just like we have an emphasis on Corinth, in the second preaching tour we'll have an emphasis on Ephesus in the third preaching tour. After Ephesus, what does he do?
Caesarea.
That's right. So another fur piece, as they say. So once again, if we just turn our ruler on here and just go from just straight from Ephesus without making any curves or anything, straight to Caesarea. This says that it's 560 miles, and so that means that if you're going to avoid, things like running your ship into the mountains and stuff like that, that it's going to be much more than 560 miles. So we've got another 600 plus miles that he's going there to get from Ephesus to Caesarea. So in fact, in these last few verses, Paul travels as far in one direction rather quickly as he did in the couple of years it took him to go the other route. To take this route. I mean, this took him a while to go. And now all of a sudden he's boom, 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 as it were. And taking care of essentially the same mileage in a much shorter period of time. I believe the text says that he was trying to get back. No, this is not where it says he's trying to get back. It just says that his head was shorn in Cenchrea, where he had a vow. And so I believe there were other places that said that they thought that he was trying to get back for some sort of observance in Jerusalem. There is no explicit indication here, though, that Paul went to Jerusalem. Though most people think that, why would you go to Caesarea and then not go to Jerusalem?
Well, it was just by the language. When he talks about Caesarea and then he goes up to greet the church and then he goes down to Antioch,
yeah,
makes you think about going to Jerusalem because it was a higher elevation.
It's true. When we go to Jerusalem, we go up, right? Every place is up to Jerusalem. That indeed is a general indicator of whether or not we're going to Jerusalem. It is a fact, however, that if you land at the beach at Caesarea, no matter where you go from there, you're going up. So I thought, well, it could be just as reasonable that he went up to salute the church in Caesarea, which certainly was there. We've seen that, or I guess we'll see it mentioned later on at the end of the third journey, right? Where he goes to Caesarea and meets with the folks there. Randy.
This is kind of, I guess, stepping out into the realm of speculation. Why, it, to me, it asks a, it begs the question, why did Paul go from Corinth to Ephesus? Why not go, if he's going to Antioch, why not catch a ship going from Corinth, or Cenchrea rather, to Antioch?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is they did not have transportation set up to where you could, oh, I can go down here to this port and catch a ship going somewhere. You had to go down and find whatever you could.
Right.
And because if you didn't take something going in the general direction you want to go, there's no telling when you would be able to. So I think he took something and got into Ephesus thinking, okay, at least I can go by land to Antioch if I have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then he's looking for another ship, and I think he found one going to Caesarea that puts him closer, and then he's able to finally get to Antioch. And that's my personal opinion. I think that it could be there's more to it than definite plans to go to Caesarea for
him. Well, that's true. I think it fits in kind of with the voyage to Rome. It said that they had taken the first ship, it went up to wherever their first stop was, and then it says that the shipmaster had to find a ship going to where he wanted to go to. Like you say, they didn't have a fold-out table of scheduled routes, you know. Wednesday at 9:45, we're heading for Ephesus, but at 10:45, you can get the direct flight to Antioch. I think that indeed is the case. It's a matter of who you're going to find. You got to go around, I guess, knocking on doors and knocking on ships and find out where you're going, where they're going, I should say. And yeah, it appeared that the guy that was in charge of the ship that was taking all the prisoners to Rome, that's exactly what he had to do. So he had to go find a ship that was going to the place where he wanted to go. Randy in front.
At the beginning of this journey, back in chapter 16, Chapter 16, verse 7. We came to Mysia, and were trying to go into Bithynia, and the Spirit of Jesus did not permit them. Passing by Mysia, they came down to Troas. It's actually before that. When they were kept from going into the Phrygian region, where is that? Oh, see, verse 6. So they passed through the Phrygian and Galatian region, having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word in Asia. They're close at that point, because if you look on the map, The Phrygian region is where Ephesus is.
Oh, yes, right, right.
In the Phrygian region. Mm-hmm. And to me, it seems as if the Holy Spirit was saying, not now.
Not now, yeah.
Right now, you're going to Troas because you're going to the Macedonian region. And we're going to do all that first.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way back, it's hard for me to think that he got to Ephesus just because that's the only place the ship was going. It seemed like God wanted him there. And when we see there in the part that we just read, where he went to the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews, he does come back and spend some time there later, but he was able to plant the seed there and let it sprout before he got back.
And who did he leave that was able to help with that planted seed? What's their names? Yeah, that's right.
It seems like that was the plan of God, was for him to be there.
Yeah. And then when he leaves, he says, I will come back if God so wills, right? We see that indeed it was God's will that he go back later. And he did indeed do that. He had written to, at another place, to the church in Rome, said that he would go there if God so willed. I think it was the church in Rome. And it turned out that God did will that he went there, but he didn't go there exactly in the methodology that he had hoped, or he had thought that he would go.
Yeah, on the third trip, he gets Corinth and he writes Rome.
Right, okay.
So whatever the situation was, God used it for his purposes. He always does. The scheduling of ships or whatever.
Yep.
It was obviously God's plan from the beginning that Paul would go to these places and he went to them.
Yes, yes. And we have absolutely no way of knowing what was going on in Ephesus at this time that wasn't going on the next time, or vice versa, or, why God called him at this time or that time, we don't know. personally, I think that he found out that there was a ship going down to Caesarea and said, "Oh, I'll take that one." Yeah, Joey.
As long as we're talking about the providence of God here, God's not just using Paul here. God uses all people that are willing to be used by him. God did not use Paul to explain more completely, more accurately the way to Apollos. He used, what's their names?
Those guys.
Yeah, those are two guys. Right. So we see the problems got here too, where Apollos was instructed more correctly in the way of the Lord, not by Paul, but by anybody who's willing to be used by God. That's encouraging us to know that God can use us today in all kinds of ways to spread the gospel.
Okay, yeah, sure. That's right. That's what he does. Noah, did you have your hand up earlier? What they said, right? Okay. All right. Here we go around. Of course, Paul has been, or will be, going around this way in the opposite direction later on. They did not have a pleasant time on that voyage at that time. So it may be the trade winds were different at that time. They may have taken a different route. They may have stayed in close to shore all the time, you know, waved by Antioch as they went by on the way to Caesarea. Or they may have gotten out here. It could have been a deep ocean vessel and they just went straight across. I don't know what their, you know, what their ships were like, nor do I want to. He gets down to Caesarea, and we've been to Caesarea before, have we not, in the book of Acts? But be that as it may, I believe that they went there on some of the preaching as they were going around in the early church preaching, and that there was indeed a congregation established at Caesarea.
Who lives in Caesarea?
Cranes.
Oh yeah, that's old. What's his name? It's a different what's his name than those other two. What's their name?
And eventually we're going to find Philip lives there too.
Philip, right, that's right. I don't have the other ones from earlier on in the Gospels listed down here. So Caesarea, of course, was named after one of the Caesars, Julius, I think. Herod the Great was sort of deeded this city. I believe it was in like 30 or 50 B.C., and this essentially became the place where he had his palace. And it is supposed that Herod, you know, spent more of his time here on the Mediterranean coastline than he did in Jerusalem. That when he had to go down to Jerusalem to take care of business, he would go down there. But there was apparently a fairly extensive city and palace and stuff there. You can see that there's also another theater right here in Caesarea. There was another something right here. There were a couple of big things there in Caesarea, but it was sort of Herod's
beach palace.
Beach palace. There you go.
They call it his winter palace. That's not the place.
I don't know. I know he had another place. There was a place called the Herodium. That's a big excavation. I don't know where that is. It's in another, and it may be one of these here for all I know. Bruce?
You know, when we go back to Acts chapter 16, where it talks about Macedonia,
yeah.
I see in King James, I see in verse 11, you know, or 12, where it says that Macedonia is the first district, a Roman colony, where the city was carrying us for certain days. So, it seemed like God would think that just him going to Macedonia would probably resolve some of the things, you know, about Rome, because it's a Roman colony. But that's what it looks like here in the King James.
Yeah, well, it says that in the American Standard so the first of the district of Roman colony. We're in the city tearing certain days. All of these areas were Roman colonies or Roman cities. Rome had conquered, the Roman Republic had taken over in the 120s or something like that, and had expanded in these areas. Places like Corinth, for example, and Athens, at least during the Grecian time and perhaps during the Roman time, were city-states. And so Athens and Corinth were sort of rivals, you know. I guess the football teams probably played one another, things like that. So, but they were not necessarily enemies, but they were certainly a good distance apart, and they were a distance apart across a very narrow isthmus, which made it easily defensible also.
It seemed like God said, this is the most important place to go. Don't,
yeah.
Don't go right here. Don't go right here.
All right, so then Paul went to Caesarea, and it says that he went up and saluted the church. So, and like we say, in so many instances, this seems to mean that he went to Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem's not any slacker of a distance either. I mean, if I just go once again as the crow flies from Caesarea to Jerusalem, we see that that's about 55 miles or so. And that's if you can walk straight across. So it's a fur piece to go also. So indeed, he may have done that, gone up to Jerusalem to salute the church, or we know that there was a church in Caesarea, and he may have saluted the church there and gone from there to Antioch. It would, of course, and as we look at that, it says that he and went up and saluted the church and went down to Antioch. You know, I look at that and I think, well, then he walked to Antioch? No. He's at a port city. He probably took another ship, I would think. Of course, now we're beginning to think that perhaps he has an unlimited supply of money. Perhaps he took another ship, but however that may be, assuming he went directly from Caesarea, which may or may not be the case, just get an approximate idea. If we go from Caesarea to Seleucia, go from Caesarea to Seleucia, which is the port for Antioch, we'll see that that's another 260 miles. So he's really racking up the frequent flyer miles here. It's quite a ways to go, and we do this in how many verses? I think it was six, right? I think that's on Mickey's slide, is that in six verses we get this whole thing done. So We've had a 600 mile journey and a 250 mile journey and another 260 mile, 300 mile journey or whatever. Anyway, we've gone a lot of ways in six verses. Yeah, Randy.
I think it's natural for us to speculate because the Holy Spirit was very clear in how he traveled from here there to here there, and then in this one verse it just says he went. You know,
there we go.
I had Caesarea, went up and greeted the church, went down to Antioch.
Yep.
So we can speculate until we're blue in the face, but it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Because if it mattered, it would have spelled it out for us.
Exactly.
I think, you know, contextually, he landed in Caesarea and went up and greeted the church. Contextually, it sounds like there's a church in Caesarea, and that's where he went.
Yeah.
To visit. Now, maybe it's up on a hill. Who knows?
Like you said, anywhere from the coast is going to be up.
But, and then how he got to Antioch, if he took a ship or he took a mule, or, you know, it doesn't really matter.
There is an airport in Caesarea, so if we, as a matter of fact, here's Caesarea, here's the Sea of Galilee. Given that the Sea of Galilee is, I think itself is below sea level, isn't it? It's pretty low anyway. Well, what does it say? It says elevation minus 709. But what that means, though, is that we've got a mountain range in between, which doesn't look like much, but we do have hilly areas and all that sort of stuff. And of course, in Caesarea here, we can see that we've got, you know, a little elevation, not much. So, yeah, but we can go from the port here at about 33 feet. Things don't get up much higher much quickly. Right there is about 60-something feet, so There's a few hills around, and that's about it. He went up the road, up the hill, to salute the church, or he went to Jerusalem. But as you say, it really makes little difference. He went and saluted the church, and then he went to Antioch. And how he went, we don't know. And as is mentioned, it can't possibly be important if God didn't feel it was necessary to tell us. So rather than speculate, we'll say he did what it says he did. Kind of like reading the verse, and somebody will say, "Well, what does that mean?" You say, "Well, it means what it says," and essentially, that's what we're concerned about. So he went down then to Antioch. It says in verse 22, And that wraps up the second preaching tour. I should have looked somewhere to see just how many miles that totaled up to, but it was just a lot. I wouldn't want to drive it in certainly any short amount of time. So, yeah, Randy.
Okay. You're talking about miles, speculating or guessing roughly how much time was he gone from Antioch on the second trip?
I thought I had heard. Well, obviously in Corinth for a year and a half, right? A little bit more, maybe even. Maybe 2 years, if we look at that many days.
I would guess 3 or 4 years.
3 or 4 years, yeah. Yeah. Because just going through the area, no matter how you took it, it had to be a long time just to do the travel. And he stayed a number of days in several of these cities. Now, none of them obviously as long as Corinth, but we do see that in a number of instances it says that he stayed a number of days, or he stayed a certain amount of time, even though it's not specific. It's going to take a while for a person essentially on foot to do all that. And I wouldn't be adverse to saying it was 3 or 4 years, 5, something like that. Of course, all the denominational commentators will give you the date that he left Antioch of Syria and the date he got back. And I go, I didn't know that. James.
From Ephesus down to Caesarea, yep. Foot, how many miles is that?
Well, it's, I think the best way is just to say it's per piece. Let me see. If we go path here and just sort of take straightish paths. So if I just take those two segments right there, that says it's 903 miles. Well over 1,000 miles, probably from Ephesus to get back to Jerusalem. You said Antioch, didn't you? So
down to Caesarea.
Okay. So we'll take 50 miles off of that, but I don't imagine it meant much to Paul to take 50 miles off. So I'm still thinking that it's in the neighborhood of 1,000 miles or so.
It's like walking to Seattle.
Walking to Seattle. Yeah. Yes, James.
I was just thinking about all the traveling that they've been doing because Dad and I have been following some hikers on YouTube that do things like the Pacific Crest Trail. That's over to, I forget what that is, but I know the Appalachian Trail from southern Georgia to Mount Katahdin in Maine, that's about 2,100 miles. Most people do it in 6 months, but here, to use hiker ones, they didn't have trail angels and trail magic and towns friendly to hikers and places with free food and... You know, this was a journey for Paul that he went on many times and faced a lot of hardships here. So
right.
It's just interesting to think about all the physical wear and tear that would have been on him doing this a lot, spending most of his adult life doing this.
Tough on his knees, huh?
Just a wee bit. And then, of course, on top of that, all the worry about and concern about the churches.
Churches.
Robbers on the road to being beaten, and Paul saw a lot of miles in his life in more ways than one.
Yeah. Yeah, and we look at this, and this is just half the trip. Not even, maybe, you know. So I go, wow, that's a long way. But he did a bang-up job. We look at all these places that are mentioned here and realize that the vast majority of them he went through. If he hadn't gone through them yet, he will go through them. And it's just amazing the amount of work that he and others with him did. So let's remember that Luke was with him on portions of this trip, that Timothy and Silas were with him in this instance across the ocean there, that those two people were with him, Priscilla and Aquila. Remember that. Joey's, you're gonna have to come up with Priscilla and Aquila each time.
Yes.
So, and so Joey, who were those two people?
It was Randy.
It's Randy's fault. Yes, I know. So, so yes, it's just amazing. And so, let's see if just in the next 47 seconds that we have to get done with this, it says then he spent some time there. Where? Antioch of Syria, right? So now we're going to go back. Whoops. Now we've gone back to Antioch of Syria, where he started off And as we look at verse 23, it says he spent some time there, and then he departed and went through the region of Galatia and Phrygia in order, establishing all the disciples. So, with your handy-dandy map, Randy, what does it say? It says Galatia and Phrygia. I think Galatia is more up in this area here, generally speaking. I think Derbe and Lystra might have been in Galatia. I think Antioch, though, it says Antioch of Pisidia, was technically in Galatia also.
We got Galatia is up a bit north.
Up in this area. Oh, more middler?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a lake.
There's a big old lake right there.
And to be fair, the region of Galatia is kind of morphed over time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't point to and say, okay, these are the borders of Galatia.
Right.
It kind of sort of generally, I don't want to say moved around, but the borders moved a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. It all depended on who was in rule at the time. So, you know, whether it was the Greeks or the Romans or the people in between or the people after or before and things like that, that the area called Galatia, as you say, its borders moved around quite a bit.
And I guess this is something that's pretty obvious, but the name of the region, how it got that name.
It's from the Gauls, right?
Yeah, there were a bunch of Gauls that moved down from France. A couple hundred years before Christ.
Yeah.
And moved into that area.
Yep. All right. I'm sure that Mickey was hoping, because he told me he doesn't like to do the questions, that we'd be through the questions today. But what we'll do next week is we'll start with the beginning of the third journey, and we will go through 23 through 28, but also do the questions. So be sure you got your questions done. In that regime. All right, thank you very much for your assistance.